Welcome, folks, to another edition of Smith and Jones. Eric Smith, Paul Jones with you. Make sure you subscribe to Smith and Jones wherever you get your podcast, Google, Apple, Spotify, or otherwise. Download, subscribe, rate, and review. And you know what? Even before I get to this week's show, which is jam-packed, I want to remind you, if you didn't hear last week's episode with Rex Chapman, go and listen to it. And if you did hear it and you didn't share it, please do so. A fabulous conversation last week about life, about addiction, about racism, about depression, about the comeback with Rex Chapman. All right, now that that's out of the way, we shift our attention to this week. And again, a jam-packed show, a lot of guests coming up this week. And we start with one of the best, one of our favorites, a former NBA player, a current broadcaster. He's fabulous with what he does and at what he does. And we saw him in town earlier in the week with the Dallas Mavericks when the Mavs came to town and knocked out the Raptors on Wednesday evening. Joining us on the line is Derek Harper.
Derek Harper, always great to see you, man. When the Raptors played the Mavs on a recent visit into town by the Mavs. Look, let's get right to the West. Let's get right to the West because we keep talking about it. It is so, with the play-in tournament now, I think, and I wasn't a big fan of it when it first started, but now when I look at it, the way it's expanded the season, like you take a team as we record this, some of the teams in the play-in, if you're Steph Curry, you might have to go through LeBron and Luka, or LeBron and Kevin Durant, just to get a seven-game series. Yeah. If you're LeBron, you got to go through Steph and KD, or Steph and Luka. If you're Luka, you're going to have to go, like, the expansion of the playoffs and the play-in in particular has made things crazy. And there is not one easy out in the Western Conference, Harp.
I would completely concur with you. I say all the time, the last couple of years, since they have implemented the play-in, those are the scariest words in the world, man, this time of year, is play-in, because nobody really wants to be in that situation. But I think, Jonesy, what it has done is forced teams to play all the way through the season. You can't be resting players. You can't be taking off unnecessarily. And you're going to have to play. I mean, the Western Conference is just loaded with talent and with solid teams. So in order for the Lakers, you put the Mavericks in there. I don't put us in there. I think we're going to be fifth or sixth when it's all said and done. That's a biased opinion. But when you start talking Lakers and Warriors, man, they are they're fighting for their lives. And depending on your schedule, I think that's going to dictate a lot. Depending on your schedule, man, you drop one and you drop out pretty much, or you drop down. So I think teams are really going to have to be at their best at the end of the season as we near the playoff run.
Hey, Derek, it's a moot point now because we're at least a couple, if not a few weeks removed from it. But based on everything you were just saying, are you surprised at all that the Lakers, the Warriors, didn't make moves at the deadline to try to bring in a little bit more talent or a little bit more depth? Because to me, you know, this is where I'm not a Dallas broadcaster or former player, but so I can't say it's a bias, but I look at the Mavs and I say, I'm still not entirely sure about their defense, but I like two of the pieces they got at the deadline, and at least one, if not both those guys, bring some defense, bring some edge, and make the Mavs a hell of a lot better than they were a month or 6 weeks ago.
Well, they give us a presence defensively, that's for sure. Let's be honest with it. When you really talk about it, nobody is playing defense right now. Heck, the game last night was 125 points plus, right? So the league doesn't allow, or the officiating, I should say, doesn't allow you to really defend the way you really want to defend. But you get a guy like Gafford, a guy, he had five blocks against his old team, Washington, a couple of weeks ago. That's a presence in the paint. You get a guy like Washington Jr. He's a pretty talented player. He's long. He's athletic. He can do a lot of different things defensively as well. So, I mean, in spite of everybody talking about defense, it's going to come to fruition at some point. But offense is going to win out. I mean, you always say, you know, great defense but better offense. I think the better offensive teams are going to be the ones to be left standing, and we are a great offensive team which gives us a chance any given night. I think when you have two superstar-type players in the league right now, you have the best opportunity and the best chance of being successful in the league. I don't care what part of the season it is. Kyrie, Luka, I mean, that's show-stopping every single night, and it wins out most nights.
Derek, it's funny because I know the three of us are going to be accused of being, you know, the old man waving our cane and talking about back in my day. But, I mean, Eric is a little behind us, but he still grew up on, you know, the Showtime Lakers and then watching through the 90s. I think about you as a defender and, you know, how you were one of the better defenders in the league and guys didn't like to go up against you. And then I look at the team that you were on in New York with yourself and Doc and people like Greg Anthony and Starks and the way Pat Riley demanded you guys play defense. There's got to be a part of your stomach that just, you know, turns over watching the way, and I'll put it in quotes, air quotes, the way defense is played right now and the way the game is officiated in this present era. That I know, Harp, there's some of it that has got to be killing you.
Yeah, no doubt about that. I couldn't play right now, Jonesy, to be honest with you. I'll foul out so early in the game, or I would have to sit down early in the game. It's different, but what do you want to see as a fan? I mean, they're not catering to us and the pass, right? What would you rather see? Guys pulling and pushing and holding and not allowing guys to go from one block to the other block? Would you rather see that, or would you rather see guys scoring and shooting threes and getting easy buckets? And I think the league is catering to what the fans want. The fans want entertainment. And it's very entertaining to watch guys go out and get 30. Luka had 72, 73 in Atlanta a couple of weeks ago, about a month ago. And people loved it. People go crazy about it. So it does, Paul, it bothers me when it comes to the game. I'm an ancient basketball player, old school, throwback player, whatever you want to call it. And that's just what that is. But at the end of the day, I'm enjoying the game just the same as I did when I played. It's different, but you have to adjust to that and keep it moving, man. 3-point, I don't know who you blame for it. The Splash Brothers.
Personally?
Who do you blame? Who do you blame for it?
My own feeling is, and Eric and I have talked about this, in a time period when you played, the big man was dominant. I made a statement on the radio once.
Absolutely.
Where people looked at me like I was crazy. I said, give me a good big man. I could get any guard. And people were like, no, no, no. Because back in our day, guard play kept you in games. And it could occasionally win you games. Now, guard play wins you games. Perimeter play wins you games. And it's because there were no big men. And the mathematicians figured out, well, if I make two threes, that's the same as those three dunks that some big guy is getting. And Golden State was part of it, the Splash Brothers. I mean, guys like Steph and Clay, they've changed the game.
There's no question about it. And there are big guys out here now. I mean, think about Wemby. I mean, what does he do? He plays on the perimeter. He's great defensively because he's so long. He's athletic as a player and all of that. But you can't get shots around him. So he's good both ways. But there are some big guys that can play the game. But you know what they've been trained to do? Handle the basketball, shoot threes, because that's what the league is. Why would you be working on your post game if you're a big and you're coming into the NBA when you're not going to get the opportunity to do those things, if you would? So, hey, man, you got to roll with it. Like you said, we're veteran guys. I'm not going to call myself old yet. We're veterans, is what I always say, Paul and Eric. But we know what it used to be. We also can keep up with what it is right now when it comes to how teams play offensively and the lack of defense in the NBA right now.
Derek, just sitting back listening, I'm trying to think of my answer to your question of who to blame. I don't know who to blame. But the one thing, I guess, for me is, and I'm thinking about the way I talk to my son, who's 14, and you know, hopefully he's not hearing this. I don't think he's going anywhere with basketball, which is fine, but he enjoys the game. And I'm trying to, you know, harp on him about the fact that it's not just about scoring. It's about the intangibles. It's about passing and blocking and steals and defense and good attitude and camaraderie and teamwork and being a good teammate and everything else, all those little things. And you see certainly a lot of that in the NBA as well, but it makes it stand out that much more now when you do see a dude that actually does defend, that can actually lock somebody down. But the frustration I find then is that player allowed to be as good as he maybe can be because the whistle is so tight now and there's so little that a defender can do. It is so geared and leaning towards the offensive player that it's hard to truly be a defensive standout because you got the clamps put on you by the officials, by the league, by the way the game's being called.
I don't know who could answer this question, Eric. I'm going to do my best. That's an excellent point that you bring up. But tell your son, tell anybody that wants to be a role player that you can make millions of dollars doing that too, because there is still a place, if you would, for guys that focus on defense and doing a lot of the little things in this league. Josh Green, a guy that plays with us, he does all of those little things, the little intangibles that helps this Maverick team immensely. I mean, his hustle, every time he goes for a loose ball, he gets it. He defends the best players on opposing teams. So there's still a place for those guys, but the bulk of what's going on in the league now, man, is offense. I don't know what trumps it, but you still can't discourage people from being who they are. Everybody doesn't have the ability. Pat Riley used to sit us down when I was in New York and define roles for us, Eric, if you would. Mm-hmm. And one of the things that he used to ask each individual player, okay, can you get me 20 a night? He come to me. Can you get me 20, Hart? I doubt it. You go to Greg Anthony. Can you get me 20 a night? You can't. So he would end up saying what you can do is defend. The hustle board is just as important as the scoreboard is the things that he used to say. So play your game, man. Do what you do as a player, but understand your role, I think, is a big factor when you come to, when it comes to really doing well in this era. It's not easy, but if you know your role and you play your role, you're still having you're having an impact on the game overall.
So, Derek, with all that we've talked about, is there a team in the West in particular that you look at? Take your own team, the Dallas Mavericks, out of it. We've already, you know, concluded that there is no warm-up, no easy dance partner, and the play-in notwithstanding. In a 7-game series, is there a team you look at and you say, oh, man, these guys could really blow up on somebody if they get going? Like, one of the teams to me is Phoenix, if Bradley Beal ever gets healthy. Like, there are so many teams, even at the top. Like, how much, we were talking about this off air, Eric and I. How much do you trust the lack of experience with a team like Minnesota or OKC, yet they've shown you over, you know, we're 60 games into the regular season that, hey, man, we are a good team. Is there a team that you really look, say, hey, watch out for these guys when the playoffs start?
You know, Paul, I kind of echo your sentiments when it comes to youth, right? But sometimes you're so young, you don't know any better. And
exactly.
You go for it. You seize the moment of an opportunity. So just like you're saying, you think Phoenix, if they're healthy, I would concur with you. I would agree with you 100% if they're healthy as a team. But that's been the problem. You know, the best ability is availability. And their main core is not always available. So that points me to the teams like the Mavericks, teams like OKC, like you just said, who they're loaded when it comes to talent. I don't think they are going to go to the conference finals or anything like that, but I think they're going to be a tough out. And the benefit of those two teams that you mentioned, Minnesota, they're going to have home court. That's big this year because of the youth on both of those teams. But I would not want to play Minnesota Edwards, and I would not want to play against Shea, a local guy from Toronto. It's going to be fun. We'll be texting back and forth, I promise you, this playoffs, because I don't think anybody knows. Anybody can win this year. Anybody can win the championship this year. Although I give Boston a slight favorite because they're good both ways. They're good offensively. They're good defensively. And, you know, they have two superstar players.
You know, it's interesting. Everything you just said right towards the end there about Boston, that's how, and Jonesy, I think I speak for you as well, that we both feel the same way about the Clippers. Like, they can play any style. They can play any way. You want to play with defense, you want to play with offense, we've got the firepower on both ends, we can stop you, we can match up in so many different ways. They've got depth at the big. They've clearly got depth all over the place. That, to me, is the team that I'm still watching for, because I think they could be real dangerous.
I like the Clippers. I really do. Injuries, always a question over there as well.
Yeah,
you think if Paul George has missed a couple of games the last couple of years. I like the Clippers. I'm a big Ty Lue fan. He was my rookie when I played my last year in Los Angeles, so I'm always pulling for Ty. I just don't think there's a team in the West that the upper echelon, as far as record is concerned right now, that they're afraid of. I saw Oklahoma City just handle the Clippers a couple of games back. They went at them like they knew them already, you know? And the parity in the Western Conference this year is just – it's never been as much parity as it is right now. So we'll have to wait and see. I'm not afraid to pick Minnesota or OKC. Because when you have a guy that's as stoic as Shea, and that's as confident as Edwards, they give themselves a chance to win. And I know experience is a huge deal. It's a big deal sometimes, but you know, you go for it. All it takes is a bucket like Strus hit the other night. For you to advance, right?
Yeah.
I mean, think about it. It's 3-3. You get to game 7. Somebody chunks up a dagger, and you go home. That simple.
Yeah. Yeah. Hey, Harp, do you think that they're not in the West, and it's all hypothetical, but as good a record as Boston has, I don't know if they'd have that record if they had to compete in the West with the strength, as you say, the parity of the West. And then I look at the East, and all it takes, as you said, is one series. And your old teammate, Doc Rivers, who I think is maligned as a coach. I mean, he's got a championship. He's great with people. People are always questioning his strategy and him as a coach. I mean, personal friendships aside, I think the guy can coach. You don't last this long if you can't and you're not good with people. Can he catch lightning in a bottle in Milwaukee? Because he hasn't had a training camp. He's brought in, you know, halfway, 60% of the way through the season. Can he turn that thing around with them?
I don't think there's any doubt. I think the thing with Boston, when you're trying to implement a new piece like Dame, it's a little more complicated. And think about what you just said about no training camp. Those are little nuances that really are big. You know, you need time together. You need time to build camaraderie and to kind of mesh things together, if you would. And I don't know if they're not going to get that time because nobody practices anymore. There's never a moment in the league where you get to practice 2 or 3 days in a row to kind of bring that thing together. So what has to happen to me for Doc and for Milwaukee is their stars have to be stars. You know, Giannis has to get it done. Dame has to get it done. The pressure is on those guys for Milwaukee to have the kind of success that was expected of them when the season started. I feel so bad for Adrian Griffin because I think he would have been a good coach had he had time on the job, but he didn't. I think Milwaukee has to find their identity. Are you going to be a great offensive team, or are you going to be a solid defensive team, or both? I think to go all the way and make noise, you have to have a combination of both offense and defense as your mainstay as a team.
Derek, I know you got to fly, so we'll end it there. I appreciate it. We could have kept going, but I know you got to get that bus, so we appreciate it, man. Thank you.
Call me anytime, man. Both you guys, man. Feel free.
That was longtime NBA vet, current Dallas Mavericks broadcaster Derek Harper. Always appreciate his time. Now, I didn't want to throw him under the bus on the air, Jonesy, but I want to have his back just to protect him from the hate mail. Shai Gilgeous-Alexander, of course, not from Toronto, from Hamilton. So, folks, we knew it. I just didn't want to. I didn't want to cut off Derek and correct him and say Hamilton. He's not a Toronto guy. He's a Hamilton guy. Hamilton proud. But it leads me to ask you. I think I know what you're going to say, or at least what we've talked about off the air. Harp was saying he doesn't want to face Minnesota or Oklahoma City, and I'm not taking anything away from Shai. He'd be getting my vote right now for MVP, and that's not showing my Canadian passport. That's me just acknowledging how good he's been this year. But I'm kind of from that school of like, you got to learn to lose to learn to win to get to that next level. And I'm not sure that the T-Wolves or the Thunder are quite there yet for me to say, yeah, I could see him in the conference final. Yeah, I could see him in the finals. Yeah, I could see them winning a championship. What about you, Jonesy?
I think Minnesota would get more of an upper hand than Oklahoma City. Minnesota probably should have won their play-in game against the Lakers last year on the road, and they threw it away. And they actually took a game from Denver in the series. So I don't think it's a stretch to be – I think Minnesota's got a little experience. The fact that, you know, they've got Mike Conley, who's been to a Western Conference Finals. There have been – a few scars for Karl Anthony Towns, a few for Anthony Edwards, but a guy like Rudy Gobert has been around the play. I would maybe trust Minnesota a little bit more than Oklahoma City because the Thunder are so young, and I don't think they have, as you say, any of those playoff scars in terms of losing before you win. I think Minnesota's got a little bit of that, and they went up against the champs last year. So I would more trust, or maybe if you're looking at his opponent, fear Minnesota than OKC. That being said, and you know, Derek Harper was a guy that was in the finals, and it came down to a game seven, and the Knicks in against the Houston Rockets, they came up flat in a game that they needed. I mean, they didn't even score 80 points. So, and those teams were both experienced. So maybe you don't trust Minnesota or OKC as much. Maybe not in a conference semifinal or a conference final, but in the first round, I would give them a fighting chance, but I'm with you. I think the experience does play a factor, especially the deeper you go into the playoffs.
On the flip side, in the East, we didn't get into a whole ton of nuts and bolts on the East, but Harp did mention liking the Celtics a lot. Am I wrong to think, because this is, again, me, I'm throwing it to you. Am I wrong to think that it's only one of two teams? It's either Boston or Milwaukee, and I definitely have Boston, you know, quite a bit ahead of the Bucks at this point, because with Embiid out, I can't really put Philadelphia in the mix, and I'm not sure that there's another team beyond that I say, yeah, they could truly win the Eastern Conference. It's, to me, a two-dog race at this point.
Yeah, it sure seems like that, but we know that the playoffs have they have a way of morphing. They have a way of bringing the best out of teams. And one of those teams that always seems to do that are the Miami Heat. Like, they just always seem to come out of nowhere come playoff time. So, yeah, it looks like a two-horse race in the East, but, we talk about playoff scars. The Cleveland Cavaliers have had some playoff scars the last couple of years. You know, they fell drastically a couple seasons ago. You know, they lose in the play-in. They've been good in the regular season and probably unnoticed all year. Do they make a run? Everybody's talking about New York. I still have to see the Knicks prove it to me. I still need to see them healthy, and they still need to prove it to me. So for the most part, I'd agree with you. I see it as a potential two-horse race in the East between, you know, Boston and Milwaukee. And, you know, I give Cleveland a little bit, and I never count Miami out. But the East playoffs may not be at times as compelling as the West.
Yeah, well, listen, I'm not saying you're wrong. You're giving more teams more credit than I am. But, hey, chances are you're probably right, and I'm wrong on that one. All right, Jonesy, we're gonna talk a little bit more probably about the Western Conference later on in the show when we hook up with our friend Tim Roy, the radio voice of the Golden State Warriors. But we're also going to get into a conversation about e-gaming and e-sports with the NBA 2K League. And this is something that just continues to gain more and more traction and momentum and fans as the years go on. And we'll dive in a little bit more to the e-sports, e-gaming world when we continue on Smith and Jones. Welcome back to Smith and Jones. Eric Smith, Paul Jones with you. Thanks again to Derek Harper for joining us. We're going to switch gears a little bit here and dive into the world of esports and e-gaming. And on the line right now, the Vice President, Strategy, Digital, Esports, and Analytics from MLSE, Sumit Arora. Sumit, I was watching back a video, I believe from 2019. So 5 years ago, you were at a sports summit overall and talking about on a panel about e-gaming, and I thought you, and I mean I don't want to butcher your words or the way you described it, but paraphrasing, you essentially spoke about when sports first started, and then spectators started to watch sports, and then television started to pick up on, well, there are people that can't get to a game, and there are people at home that might want to watch the game, so now we broadcast the games. And just the evolution of sports and how we view sports that way, and then drawing the correlation to esports. Because there are probably still now, let alone 5 years ago, let alone 10 years ago, that people that sit there scratching their heads going like, really? People watching other people play video games? But it's, to your point, the natural evolution of the way sporting has happened in the history of civilization, right?
Yeah, that's right. I think you're right. I think it's generally speaking, you know, two things have happened, I think, at the same time. One is our appetite to consume sports keeps growing beyond just the games and tuning in to watch or attending in person. And I think specifically with the NBA, it's a 365-day-a-year experience now for a fan, from the draft to free agency to, you know, starting the season. Now we've got this in-season tournament, which is incredible, to All-Star, you name it. But fans can't get enough of basketball, and they want it all the time. And so we as teams want to make sure we're able to deliver our fan experience what they want, you know, anytime, anywhere, and any way. And I think, so, you know, video games is a great way for people to connect. And you know, NBA 2K is one of the most popular video games in the world. So somebody who's sitting there playing 2K is a basketball fan who's connecting to the game, and we're looking for ways to reach them. I think the other part of it, to your point, is people are just consuming content and consuming things that entertain them in different ways. It's not just about tuning into broadcast television or the radio, but now it's, you know, YouTube and Twitch and social media looking for content and just trying to you know, soak it in a way that they want to consume it and the way they like to share it. And so I think you're seeing the convergence of both those two things happening at the same time.
For me, Sumit, it's a... It was, it is, and it always will be a competitive thing. And, you know, especially in the gaming world, whether it's basketball or anything else, there's competition involved. And I guess the thing that I see fascinating about this is the whole evolution of the 2K League, because I'm a golfer and I can go out, and if I can get on to, you know, Glen Abbey or St. George's, I can play the same Canadian Open course that the Tiger Woods played, that Rory McIlroy played. And I can play with the same ball, the same clubs, the same equipment, and I can see how I stack up against them. Oh, wow, he hit it there? Boy, he made he made an eagle on that hole. And I look at the video game world the same way. As you said, 2K, it's you can go to your store and buy the game and start playing it. And now you're looking at people that do this in a highly competitive environment and that are really good at it. And to me, that's the part that I find fascinating, that I can be sitting at home in my basement playing the same game that people are playing in a highly competitive environment, for accolades, for wins, losses, and in a competition. And to me, that's the part that's really, really captivating.
You're totally right. It is the competition part of it. And I think in general, we all appreciate the best in the world at what they do when they're doing things that we care about. And I think you're right, Paul. Video games is no different than us watching the best basketball players in the world or the best hockey players in the world or best golfers. And I think these guys and girls that compete are incredibly talented. And I think one of the things that's great about, I think NBA 2K specifically is that it's not just about competing to win the games, but there's also a lot of strategy that goes into how are you going to compete. And if you think about how we look at sports, when you think about how to field a winning team, you think about positions and what's the type of skills that you want at one position versus the other. What's the style of play? You know, you guys are basketball guys, and you know from a coaching perspective, okay, how's the offense going to fit the personnel? Or how's the defensive strategy going to fit the personnel? You think about these things all the time. And for individuals that like to play NBA 2K, they're literally thinking about how am I going to build my player? And what height, what speed, what, position, what archetype do I want? And a lot of that strategy goes into deciding how you're going to be competitive. And that's a cool feature of the 2K League, where we got the best 120, 130 players in the world, but also the selection and the strategy of how they build their players to compete is super interesting. And a lot of times that's the difference between a lot of these teams when there's a lot of parity.
You know, it's funny, Sumit, before we brought you on, I was telling Jonesy, just like on a personal side, I'll sit at home playing 2K against my son, and the way we both play sort of mirrors our generations or the way that we view how the game is played to some extent. And what I mean by that, and I just told the story to Jonesy, but I'll share it with you. I'm not great at shooting the three in 2K, but I can pound it down low and go with a big man, especially if I've got an athletic big man that can go from the elbows or in and down in the paint. And points in the paint at the end of the game might be 70 to 15, and I'm just whooping him inside. But if he's got a team with shooters, I'm getting destroyed, and I'm trading threes for twos, and he beats me by 20-plus because he's just draining threes. And it's interesting how even the game can mirror the way the real game is being played on the floor and the evolution of the three-point shot and the evolution of the athletic big man and the multi-tool players and the multi-positional players, how it really does kind of mirror and mimic real life very much, very often, especially through the hands of whomever is playing the game itself.
1,000%. The best players and coaches in our league have predominantly been players that have played high level, whether it's, high school, varsity, in college, basketball, they've coached or been coached in high level programs. So the basketball IQ is something that translates right away, in addition to the, the stick skills when it comes to, using controllers to play video games. I mean, that's important. I think the other thing to your point, Eric, is basketball strategy is basketball strategy. And I think in any sport, you're faced with the decision, are you going to adapt to your opponent or are you going to force your opponent to adapt to you? And it's based on strengths and weaknesses and everything else. So just like you going up against your son, you got to work twice as hard to win with two-pointers than he can with three-pointers. So your ability to defend the three is going to help you decide whether you can win or not with that style of play. And if not, you're going to have to catch up to him, right? And I think that happens on a basketball court like we saw last night, with the Raptors. When they play versus any other basketball, competitive basketball program, it's the same question that coaches have to answer, every day they play.
There, I know it's in its infancy, but is there a franchise that you see on their way to becoming, for whatever reason, a dominant, a storied franchise in the 2K league? Like, traditionalists know that, like, the Celtics and the Lakers have the most banners, and they always seem to, be near the top or be featured. Do we have any of those trends developing in the NBA 2K League? I know Toronto, you and I met at an event just around the time that the NHL All-Star Game was in Toronto. And we talked about, you know, you introduced me to the new coach and the whole bit. Is there a team or a franchise that's developing that aura, that magnetic pull in the 2K League the way it has in the big league?
Yeah, it's a great question. I mean, look, the super proud part of me doesn't want to give credit to anybody else because we want to be the best and we want to be that team. But definitely there's some teams that have had some success. The Wizards have been a tremendous franchise, you know, on the court. They've won, you know, multiple titles. You know, we had an undefeated regular season, a historical regular season a few years ago, and we were on our way to what we felt was a really championship caliber season, and we were upset in the playoffs by the Wizards. And they went on to win that title and then repeat. So they've definitely been one that we look at and admire and respect as, you know, a benchmark of how to be good in this league. I think the good news for us when we look at it is when you look at the ingredients that makes a team successful, I think we have all the ingredients. We've got this great coach. We've got some great veteran, high character players on this team. You know, we've got talent. You know, we have our point guard was, you know, top three MVP candidate, won a tournament MVP last year. And we've got an organization that's surrounding them with all the needs that you need to win. And I think we've got all the ingredients. I think sometimes in sports, things don't go your way. But I feel like we would, you know, bet on ourselves as much as any other organization in the ability to win a championship, you know, in the future, just by putting the ingredients together that we have and hope that it all connects.
Sumit, you just touched on this a little bit, but I'm going to ask the question anyways, or maybe ask it in a bit of a different way. The season just tipped off on Wednesday night. When I don't know whether it's talking about the league itself or specifically Raptors Uprising, how have things changed? How have you seen things change and evolve and clearly get better since the 2K League first started, since Raptors Uprising first came in, to where we are now in 2024?
I think in a couple of ways, Eric. I think one was when the league first started, it was very much a regimented 5 versus 5. What you see in real life, traditional basketball is going to be replicated. A long regular season with a playoffs. And it was very much a North American, you know, NBA, you know, season structure and gameplay model. And I think the whole point of this, you want to bring the best of both worlds. You want to bring the basketball world and, you know, the video game world together in a way that resonates with fans of both and have a chance to come together. Because we're trying to reach fans that we're not reaching traditionally, you know, the way the Raptors would engage with our fans today, with coming to a game or watching on TV or in other ways. You're trying to, you know, reach that new fan that may not be connected to you in a traditional sense. And you're also trying to go where your fans are when they're not, you know, focused on your team. And these are other areas of their lives that they're super passionate about. And gaming's got this great cultural appeal as well. So I think what the league has done a great job of over the last couple of years is just evolving. So now we've got multiple in-season tournaments. We've got a half of a season, which is 3v3. Because 3v3 is actually one of the most popular ways of gameplay for NBA 2K. If you look at the number of people that play it every day or, you know, weekly. So it's a 3v3 format and a 5v5 format, you know, combined. And, you know, it's a tournaments that lead to a playoff sort of model. So it's a little bit of a not your typical NBA format. So I think in that way, it's created a bit more familiarity with people that are used to sort of the esports tournament model, but also, you know, with people that are used to the North American, you know, sports model. I think the other thing, too, is the content around the game. What I love about esports and what I love about 2K League is you get behind the curtain in a way that it's hard to do in traditional sports. And, you know, you're going to see as much content on our social channels, you know, talking about the training, you know, what does it feel like after a loss? What does it feel like after a win? How do these guys qualify? What's the grind they have to go through? There's a lot of authentic, you know, who are they and what's happening on this journey. And the other thing you talked about it, Eric, about, you know, how you play your son, people want to know how to be good at this game, right? And Paul was talking about translating being a golfer on the same golf course. We can drive so much engagement by showing people, here are the tips and tricks to play the game. And so we focus a lot more on that in addition to just what's happening on the competitive standpoint, because as much as our fans want to see us win, they also want to know how to be really good at 2K and how do the best in the world get good at 2K. So we you know, on our TikTok channel, you'll find, and on YouTube and Instagram, this incredible content that just shows how our players build their archetypes or how to hit a jump shot or how to run this play. And that people can't get enough of that. The basketball junkies love that. The 2K, you know, fans love that. And I think it's a great way to deliver experiences to our fans that we might not have been doing on day one.
Sumit, we appreciate the time. All the best, and we'll look forward to checking in maybe later in the season.
Great, fellas. Thanks so much for having me.
That was the Vice President of Strategy, Digital Esports, and Analytics for MLSE, Sumit Arora. All right, shifting gears, we're going to go back to the on-court stuff and back to a team we've talked a whole lot about for a number of years, and understandably so. And they're always entertaining, and we always love chatting with one of our favorites as well, the radio voice of the Golden State Warriors, Tim Roy. Tim, we just finished chatting about esports, and this is a perfect transition to now talk about the Golden State Warriors, because oftentimes when you're watching the Warriors, especially Steph, it's like you're watching a video game. What he can do with the basketball, the way he plays, the way he shoots, from where he shoots and whatnot. And I'm guilty of this. I'm guilty of not looking at the standings every single day, but I look down, at least at the time that we're having this conversation, Golden State 3 games above .500. Yeah, okay, you know, in the play-in right now, but considering the injuries that this team has had, considering what they've been through this season, considering they didn't make any additions at the deadline, to be where they are speaks to the talent they still have, and to me at least, from the outside looking in, speaks to a lot of what Steph Curry is still able to do to prop this team up and to keep them relevant in potentially pushing towards a postseason berth.
Yeah, you know, and it's really funny too, Eric, when you look at it, that the way the standings look, the Warriors have played the least amount of games of any of those teams. So they have games at hand. Like, they trail the Lakers by a half game, but they have 3 games at hand there. So you get an idea, they can maybe move up a little bit because of the talent they have, and you know, the Draymond suspensions didn't help, but I think it kind of got Draymond refocused. He obviously wasn't right mentally at the beginning of the year, and he's been fantastic since coming back. And the other thing, which is amazes me because of everything they've gone through this year, and then you look up, they're 2 back in the loss column of the number 6 spot. Now, I'm not saying they're going to get there because, you know, that's a lot of real estate to cover, but they have given themselves a chance to really move up. I think they'd like to at least move up to the 7-8 bracket so that maybe you're not playing 2 games just to get into a 7-game series. But I will say this, and again, you know, I'm the voice of the Warriors, but I think if I'm in the upper bracket, with the exception of Denver, who's beaten the Warriors 7 straight times, I don't know if any of those other teams really would want to see Golden State in a 7-game series, because, you know, there's always the opportunity that Steph may go off for a couple, and then maybe Draymond has a game where he controls things, and they've got their experience and everything else. So I think they're kind of the wild card in all this in the West.
Tim, we were talking to Derek Harper earlier from Dallas, and, you know, I'm going to ask you the same question I asked him. There's no easy dance partner in the West this year. I mean, we were talking about it. I mean, as we record this, if you're Golden State, you have to go through LeBron and maybe Luka to get to a 7-game series, or go through LeBron and maybe Kevin Durant if they fall into the play. And it is absolutely ridiculous how difficult it is. Is there a team, take the Warriors out of it, because you are the voice of the Warriors, and listen, they're the team that went from the play-in 1 year to the championship the next year. Is there a team that you look at out there and go, you tilt your head to the side and you go, other than the Warriors, you go, look out for these guys. They could be really dangerous if they come together or they get healthy, or, you know, the stars align for them.
You know, the team, there are a couple teams I look at that I really think have a chance, and Dallas is one of them, because, you know, drafting Lively, doing the deals that they've done, they seem to have found a really nice chemistry there. And, you know, especially, and that's not always easy to do when you have guys like Luka and Kyrie, because, you know, they're so ball dominant. And so that's a really interesting team to me to watch. The Clippers are a team that, if you're a Warrior fan, they scare you because of one simple fact. The one superstar in the league that the Warriors, during their, you know, 5 years going to the finals and all that dynasty stuff,
that the one player they had a losing record against was Kawhi Leonard. They just don't have a matchup for him at all. And then, of course, Denver, they're the defending champs. But those are three teams I'm really intrigued about. But the Clippers and Dallas, to me, are two that really, really kind of catch my eye. But you're right. I mean, there's a possibility you could have Luka Doncic, Kyrie Irving, Kevin Durant, Devin Booker, LeBron James, Anthony Davis, the Splash Brothers, and Draymond all in the play-in bracket. That's insane. It's insane.
That's crazy. Yeah, that is crazy.
It really is. And to me, Tim, it goes to a conversation we were having earlier in the show with Derek Harper. Jonesy and I are, I don't know, Jones, I don't want to put words in your mouth. I think we're kind of on the fence, or maybe we're at different ends or different sides of the fence on when you look at how, I don't know, I don't want to call it bottom heavy, or maybe just how deep the conference is right now, considering all that talent. But is the top end as worrisome as perhaps it's been in the past? My point is, are we worried about Oklahoma City? Are we worried about Minnesota? Not to take anything away from what they've done, not to take away from the fact that Shea might be the MVP and Towns and Edwards have been fantastic, but are we scared of the Timberwolves and the Thunder yet at this point in their arc?
No, I would say I'm not as frightened as you would be of Denver, I think, just because Denver, they have that thing, and you guys saw with the Raptors to a certain extent, that you know, when you win a championship, the guys who go through that, they have an inner calm about the thing. You know, they know, okay, oh, we're down 10 in the third, okay, no worries, we got this. You know, or may, I should say down 20 now in the third in today's NBA. But, you know, the I think the West is more balanced. They don't have a team that's super dominant. And so, yeah, I think, to me, the veteran teams are a little more scary than those two. Just because, again, nothing against both those teams. They're fantastic teams, and they're going to be a pain in the butt for the West for years to come now. But they haven't gone through it yet. And there's a process to that. And I was telling somebody the other day, I think the Eastern Conference will have a champion. The Western Conference will have a survivor, you know, the whoever gets through the West.
Yeah. Tim, I want to dive a little bit deeper into the Warriors, because people were throwing dirt on the dynasty. And when Draymond was having his issues, you know, people were coming out of the woodwork with the you know, Klay Thompson has to be traded. And Klay's recently come out and said, hey, if I can make it that way, I'm going to be a Warrior for life. And I look at, as you said just a minute ago, the fact that they've been through it. And I don't see the Warriors as a team that your scary matchups notwithstanding with, you know, Denver and the Clippers. But I don't see the Warriors as a team that says, oh, we must have home court advantage to win. I mean, look at what happened with Sacramento last year. And so is there, in spite of the storm or perceived storm going on in the Bay Area with that team, is there a calmness and a quiet kind of, hey, don't let us get into a spot where we can win, because we're going to show you?
Well, that's what I kind of alluded to before. I think their belief is, hey, we can do a 7-game series with anybody, and you know, they think they can win. And you know, even though they're not in their prime, you know, the Warriors now come off the bench with two future Hall of Famers, Chris Paul and Klay Thompson. I mean, that there's something to that. You know, they've been through the wars a bunch of times. They know how to play. They know how to manufacture buckets and things like that. And so there is that sense, I think, that they're kind of coming together right now. Unfortunately, Andrew Wiggins is dealing with a personal problem right now, and he's gone from the team. We hope everything's okay with him. But even without Wiggins, you've got enough talent there to really, you know, put a fear into people, because they come at you in so many different ways. That Steph, you got to worry about him. The gravity of Klay Thompson, you can't let him get started, because, you know, as you know with Klay, it just takes one, and then the next five are going in. And then you got Draymond to deal with, and then now you got guys like Kuminga and Pajemski who give you a totally different look. And so, I think that there's a quiet confidence around the Warriors that, you know, they've got some things to clean up. Defensive transition's one of them. And if they can do those things, they've got enough talent to really hang with anybody in the West.
Tim, I respect the fact that, and I don't say this you know, in a negative way, you're quote unquote just the broadcaster, just like we're just the broadcasters. We're not in the front office, not the GM, etc. However, I'm still going to ask the question anyway. You re-sign Steve Kerr to a lucrative, extremely rich contract, which, oh yeah, by the way, coincides with the 2 years remaining on Steph Curry's deal. Yet if we reverse a little bit, the Warriors didn't make a move. Not saying they didn't try, but they didn't make a move ultimately at the deadline. Then we fast forward and look ahead now to the offseason and questions about Draymond Green or potentially Klay Thompson and what his role might be with either the Warriors or someone else. Like, where are we at with Golden State in terms of trying to, at least for two more years, continue to build around Steph and Steve Kerr and keeping this window open as much as possible versus just sort of being stuck in maybe a bit of a limbo range? Like, where do you land on that?
Yeah, I think a lot of it really depends on how much progress their young players make and what moves they can make this offseason, re-signing Klay, maybe adding somebody on a veteran minimum, that kind of a move, because they're really, you know, their cap situation is what it is. And, you know, whether, you know, you like it or not, that Draymond, Steph, and Klay, they deserve every penny that they get. You know what the Warriors were like before those guys arrived and before Steve Kerr arrived. All those guys deserve every penny because, you know, the Warriors have skyrocketed to one of the most, you know, one of the most lucrative franchises on the face of the planet. But yeah, I think it's interesting. I don't think there was a guy out there at the deadline that was available that really moved the needle for them. They could make a trade for, you know, a high priced player, say in Chicago, but they didn't really feel that was going to move, you know, to a championship type needle for them. And so I think they looked around and said, you know what, we're getting guys back here. We're going to get Chris Paul back. Wiggins is starting to round into form, and I think they felt that their additions would come from, you know, internal in the roster. And, you know, to a certain extent, if you look at the last, you know, 12, 13 games, that's been true.
Yeah. Tim, what's the focus then for, I mean, we've talked about, I wouldn't say championship or bust, but this is a team that they're getting into that upper echelon of the NBA where, you know, they count chips. They do. I mean, when you look at everything that's happened in the last little while, this team is banking on championships, and that's kind of what makes the season a real success for them. So what you know, they did get basically a guy back when Chris Paul comes back. That's like getting a free agent. That's like you said, it's like a trade, getting that guy back in your lineup. And now that things have been shuffled and seem to be a little bit more stable, where are they going the last, I don't know, the last part of the season here coming home in terms of measuring themselves against others? Maybe Steve is the master of, kind of like Nick Nurse used to be. He's got something that works and you see it once and then he puts it in his pocket and you don't see it again till later when he needs it. What do you think the focus is for him, the coaching staff, the team coming home, getting ready for the playoffs?
Yeah, and I just realized I didn't answer Eric's question too well either. But
that's fine. I was going to let it slide. It's all good.
The focus out of the playoffs is, I think they've got a couple things to clean up. They need to get better defensive transition. They're not very good at that at all, okay? And one of the things they've done recently, I've noticed, is that they're not gambling as much on defense. And I think if they keep that going, then their defense, since Draymond got back in the starting lineup, has been a top five defense. And so if they keep that, keep it solid on the defensive end, and get back in transition, especially after made buckets. They've been very alarming at not doing that well this year. I think they've got a chance to be really, you know, again, a team you don't want to face, you know, in a first-round playoff series. But, again, they are who they are because of what's going on this year, so they're in the play-in bracket right now, you know, so that they're rolling dice there. That's a tough equation. Now, as far as going back to your thing, Eric, about being in limbo, you know, the owner who really handles all the basketball side stuff, Joe Lacob, has said that they are not going to be a team that's just going to kind of fade away, that he's going to be on top of this to try to keep the Warriors at a high level. So if it doesn't go well for Golden State this year, if they don't get to at least a second-round series or maybe a conference final or whatever, and then I think I think you would see some interesting moves by the Warriors in the offseason. But they do like their young players. They found something in Pajemski that nobody saw, I think, and Kuminga has become the player, or starting to become the player they think he, you know, they thought he was going to be. And so, you know, I think they feel good about the future, but I think they know they're not good enough to have like a dynastic run that they did years ago.
Tim, we appreciate the time as always. Thanks for joining us.
Guys, always a pleasure to talk to two of my favorite guys on the trail. Really is. And you guys continue to have your success and your variety of roles in the Raptors broadcasting.
That was the radio voice of the Golden State Warriors, Tim Roy. Again, folks, make sure you subscribe to Smith & Jones wherever you get your podcast, Google, Apple, Spotify, or otherwise download, subscribe, rate, review, and share. Thanks to Sumit Arora for joining us. Also, Derek Harper and Tim Roy. For Austin Mackey, our producer, and Paul Jones, I'm Eric Smith. Thanks for tuning in to Smith & Jones.